Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined by the early bird. I don't know if it's an early bird or a late night owl, but it's Jeff Rimebold. You're in Hawaii, Jeff, and what's the time while we're recording this?
It is 4:30 a.m. in Hawaii.
I bet there have been equal amounts of times in your life where you've been just going to bed at 4:30 a.m. or just going up. What's the over-under?
I tell you what, when I was younger, it was a lot more 4:30 going to bed as opposed to now, 4:30 getting up.
Yeah, so those days when you could go to bed at 4:30 and you'd be absolutely fine. Now it's like if somebody suggests you start a film at 9 o'clock at night, you're like, are you crazy? It's nearly bedtime. Listen, yep. It's nearly training camp time. In fact, it is training camp time for the Chicago Bears and the Baltimore Ravens. They've already opened their training camps due to them playing in the Hall of Fame game on Thursday, August the 2nd. That's the first of the preseason games in the NFL. Jeff, tomorrow I'm going to be heading off to the United States. I'm going to be seeing the Titans, the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Seahawks. Just generally, let's chat a little bit about training camp. For me, it's one of my favorite times of the year. I think it's kind of football in its purest form because you're just so up close and personal with it. I used to like the fact that teams went away and were just all about the football and would be on these, you know, obscure college campuses. That doesn't happen as much now. I think there's only 9 teams going away this year to be not in their home base. But, you know, the fans are there. They get to see it. I just think it's just a great time. And you kind of have those sort of butterflies in your stomach as a fan because you know it's just around the corner this season.
Yeah, you know what, Neil? I remember in 2001 being in training camp with the Chiefs and how amazing it was. We're in River Falls, Wisconsin. You talk about, like you say, a nondescript college campus with University of Wisconsin, River Falls. You're probably 5 hours drive from Kansas City and at least. And every day it was amazing, the amount of fans that would, and I'm talking about families, not just, you know, fans. I'm talking about the entire families that would take their vacation time and drive to River Falls and spend, you know, a week or, you know, sometimes 2 weeks every day, drag the kids to watch, you know, some, I mean, the repetitive drills, the, you know, I mean, you got to love football, is all I'm saying. And I'm telling you what, it's amazing how the fans embrace training camp.
I was going to give you a bit of musical background there, Jeff. I didn't actually mean to. I was looking for a story on my computer and I didn't have the volume down. So you were about to get the music to the can, you know, which sort of started playing in the background. So luckily I hit mute. I'm sure people picked up on it. They always do. Jeff, I think that's the thing that strikes me. It's like, you know, it's a time for the fans, and it's a time when, you know, fans get great access to the players and the players will stay around and sign stuff. But also, I've seen the other cold, harsh reality of it is that the team are there to get their work done. And I was in Kansas City and I was in Miami when storms rolled in and the fans had only just arrived and the players were like, see you later, we're going to the indoor facility. End of the day for the fans, that's it. But, you know, it is that kind of balance. It's, of course, teams want to be accessible to the fans, but this is now, this is the time, isn't it? This is where everything you kind of installed in OTAs, in all those mini camp practices, this is where you have to fine tune it and make sure you've mastered it ready for the start of the season. So it's a further step along the process, isn't it?
Yeah, this is where a team really, you know, comes to be a team, you know, that, you know, and one of the reasons why for years you went away was the team building of the 6 weeks or 8 weeks, depending on how long you're in camp, of training camp. And, you know, the team lived in a college dorm. They ate in the college cafeteria. They walked to meetings or rode bikes to meetings. And, you know, like I say, it was always cool when you go to practice because, you know, the players normally rented bikes or bought bikes of their own. And you know, young kids would walk along next to them and carry their helmet. And it was really a time, you know, almost a kind of a Americana kind of time, and you know, some of that's gone now because everybody's got facilities and everybody, you know, different teams are you know, have less access to the players than others. Some teams are even charging fans now to come watch practice, which I think is really, really a tough deal for the fans, because this has always been a time for the fans and for the teams to become football teams.
What a beautiful segue. You've linked in, Jeff, money and training camp. And money and training camp is a reason why Julio Jones has just announced that he's not going to report to training camp for the Atlanta Falcons. I've got Khalil Mack on my interview list with the Raiders. There's every chance he won't be there with the silver and black. It's the business of the business. Le'Veon Bell won't be there, Jeff, because he didn't get a long-term deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's going to play under the franchise tag, and his agent, Adisa Bakari, said this is likely to be Le'Veon's last season as a Steeler. Let's talk a little bit of the business side of this, because this is going to impact preparations for a season. Maybe as well, Jeff, does it impact it differently from different positions? I mean, a running back, is it instinctive? You can come in late. Le'Veon Bell came in late last year and had a good season. Julio Jones at receiver, is that a little bit different? First of all, position to position when it comes to holdouts.
Well, I think it does matter by position because, you know, first of all, running backs are, you know, a tough position anyway. And Neil, you know, exposing yourself to the hits that you're going to get in training camp and all the, you know, you want them in for the work, particularly when they're, you know, when you're involved on, I think offensively it's more important because the timing is so imperative in offensive football. But, you know, the players have to weigh that against, you know, the exposure that they get. And a guy like Bell, who's, you know, going into a, you know, kind of a lame duck season with the Steelers, it's big for him because, you know, he's going to put himself out in the market. And, you know, they've had a long, long, long negotiation. I'm sure it got tough at times. And now it's going to be I think it's going to be really interesting to watch the dynamics with the Steelers. You know, he's done this before, but he's always done it with the idea that he's going to be a Steeler. Now it's become very public that this is probably his last year in Pittsburgh. And I think the dynamics in the locker room are going to be what's really interesting to watch with this one.
Yeah, and we talked about this when we did the state of the franchise, Jeff. The Steelers aren't quite dysfunctional, but they're not very Steeler-like at the moment. Everyone seems to be dipping into each other's business. We know that Antonio Brown did that last year when talking about Le'Veon Bell's contract situation and telling him to get into camp. But, you know, here's Le'Veon Bell. He's, what, 27 years old? I think, yeah, 27. And, Jeff, we know that, I don't know, those running backs that get piled up with the 400 carry seasons or 400 touches, they're rarely heard of again. I know that, you know, DeMarco Murray was never the same after that year when he got kind of run into the ground by the Dallas Cowboys. DeMarco Murray is now retired. Le'Veon Bell had a 400 touch season last year, Jeff. Pittsburgh are probably going to want that kind of output out of him again. Le'Veon Bell, the competitor and the running back, is going to want every one of those 400 touches. Le'Veon Bell, the businessman, would be better off hoping that that's a load that is shared and that he's not used that much. It's just a fascinating dynamic that might be unique to the running back position, because the more you get hit, the more carries you have, your value as a player should rise because you're putting up the yardage and touchdowns, but in fact it might actually decrease.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out because, as you said, he has to have the numbers to show that he can still produce and to get the big contract that he wants. Now, but that is a double-edged sword. The more, you know, the more carries, the more hits, the more exposure to injury, and there will be teams that will say, yeah, but you just came off of two, you know, 400-touch seasons, and you're 28 years old next year, that's really old for a running back. So this is a really interesting year for him. I think he's got to, you know, he's got to have, obviously, a tremendous season to get the kind of contract he's looking for. But again, with that, with those numbers comes all that exposure to hits and the risk.
What do you make of Julio Jones, Jeff? I think over the first 3 years of his contract, he's averaged, with all the bonuses and everything, about $16 million per year, but obviously he's kind of outplaying that contract. But I don't know. I feel like he's. This is a difficult one because he's got a number of years left on his contract. I think still a couple of years, maybe two, maybe 3 years left on his contract. The Falcons will be saying, well, we've paid you handsomely early on and you've had your signing bonuses and everything. This is an interesting one again. And it also, does the court of public opinion have an impact on this, Jeff? Because I've already seen stuff on Twitter saying, oh, you can tell Julio's been hanging out with T.O. during the off-season. I mean, already there's some negativity towards Julio Jones here, even from Falcons fans.
And isn't that amazing? Because here we're talking about a guy who, when we talked about previously, Neil, guys with the great attitude, guys that are team guys first, guys that are exactly what you're looking for, it was always Julio Jones. But, you know, it's very, very difficult for a player because of the way they're designed, the way they're built. In their, you know, they got strong egos. They're very prideful guys. They're alpha males. And when you see yourself as the best receiver in the league and you watch other guys making more money, getting more notoriety, all that stuff, it grinds on you. And the people around you are constantly telling you, you know, that you're constantly getting reminded of it in the media. And I think it's just worn him down.
Jeff, do fans generally tend to side with the team? Because the team's going to be around long after the player's gone. And I know sometimes, you know, I've seen it with Pittsburgh last year, even with Antonio Brown. They will leak little things here and there to make the player look greedy. The reality is these players have a very, very short period. There's a sweet spot. There's a sweet spot in terms of what they're trying to earn. You know, and they want to make that money last a lifetime in a way. So I can understand why the players do it, but it does seem to be quite often that fans are furious with players. Whereas really, when you think about it, you know, if I'm a Rams fan, I want the team to pay Aaron Donald. I want them to get that business done. I'm not disputing Aaron Donald's worth. So it's just an interesting one because we've already seen a little bit of a backlash against Julio.
Yeah, I think it cuts both ways. I think, you know, sometimes you see the agents, you know, negotiate in the media, trying to get the fans, you know, to get behind the player and pressure the clubs to get them in. And then you see the clubs, as you say, do it the opposite, where their little bits of information are leaked about the contract or what the player wants, or, you know, but that's really, 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 you know, you got to be really cautious with that, because when you get into those acrimonious ones where it gets to be really adversarial between the club and the player, and the club and the fans, or the fans and the player, you know, that's not good for anybody. And the good teams normally keep these kinds of things as quiet as they can keep them, and keep their business, you know, the business of the business, as business and not as public fodder.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. When you look at the Rams last year, they tried to get the deal done with Aaron Donald. They didn't agree terms on a long-term deal, but what the Rams did was waive all of the fines that had been accrued against Donald during training camp, and both sides vowed to sit down again and discuss it again. There was no bad-mouthing of anyone in public. Now, clearly Aaron Donald will probably, you know, he's going to hold out and push hard again this summer, but that seems to be the way to do it.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about Aaron Donald, here's a guy that's, you know, many people feel the best defensive player in the National Football League.
Yeah.
And, you know, his team, that they can't get a deal done, goes out and gets another player at basically the same position, an interior defensive lineman, who's making more money than Aaron Donald's making. So, you know, it's a dicey deal. I mean, this is one of the things. People think that it's more than collecting football cards. I'm telling you, when you're putting a football team together, it is you're dealing with an awful lot of things. We talked previously, Neil, about how Bill Polian used to say his number one job was fiscal harmony in the locker room. And you know, I think that's a big part of what these guys have to do.
And Jeff, it's moving parts and unexpected twists along the way if you're a general manager, because we read that Odell Beckham Jr. is not going to hold out. He's got a really good relationship with Pat Shurmur. He loves John Mara, the owner of the Giants, and he's kind of going into training camp hoping that the long-term deal gets done, regardless of the fact that he's shown up and shown willing. So, you know, if you'd have put money on Odell Beckham Jr. or Julio Jones holding out this summer, I bet we'd be losing money right now.
Yeah, you're exactly right on that.
It's just bizarre how it pans out. Jeff, another one just want to touch on who's going to be absent for the start of the Cleveland Browns camp. And this is a little bit worrying. You know, and hopefully, I think everyone sort of wishes Josh Gordon the very best and hope that he's back. Clearly, he's had some addiction issues over the past couple of years, was long time suspended by the NFL. He says it's part of an ongoing sort of need to address his mental health and anxiety, and he wants to get it straightened out before he heads to training camp, Jeff, which is admirable and brave that he's coming out and sort of mentioning that. But again, he's about to enter a really sort of stressful situation and a real grind, and again, it just raises those concerns for him.
Yeah, you know, again, a tremendously talented player and a guy that's fought with some demons that he's had for a long time. And you know, again, Neil, when guys go through these things, you really lean on the player development people in the organization and, you know, all the people that they can get in on board to help a guy like this. And, you know, all of us as NFL fans and all of us people like to see Josh Gordon, you know, play and play well and you know, but more importantly, like to see him be a healthy human being.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned earlier, we'll just continue our training camp chat. Basically, this everything about training camp this week, and then we'll take some of your questions in the mailbag. So the Bears and Ravens have opened their camps. I saw a lot of reports, Jeff, talking about the excitement level around the Bears. We know they added to their offense this year. They have Mitchell Trubisky, first-round quarterback last year, but they put talent around him with Allen Robinson at wide receiver, Taylor Gabriel at wide receiver, Trey Burton at tight end. And interestingly, Jeff, lots of talk early in camp about Matt Nagy's impact on the team, expecting to see a lot of run-pass option. I know it's that time of year, so I'll be careful to get too carried away, but there's a lot of excitement around the Bears.
Yeah, I think so, you know, it was interesting hearing Long, you know, the offensive lineman, say the other day. He said, they asked him about his team, and he goes, you know, I used to know all the rap songs. Now, with all these young guys, I don't know half of them. So I think that's an indication of where the Bears are. But they have brought in talent at positions where for years they have struggled, and that's skill on offense, you know. When John Fox took that over, he got what was a bad defense really shored up, and the Bears are respectable on defense and sometimes pretty good on defense, but have struggled so much to make plays offensively. And you know, I think they've gone out and addressed that. Matt Nagy's addressed some of the schematic issues. They're going to open that thing up. It's going to be much more like some of the, you know, the dynamic stuff that you saw Kansas City do. You know, they've gone out and found players that they think can help Mitchell Trubisky take that next step as a quarterback. Because, you know, there were indications last year, Neil, that kid, you know, you saw the way the ball came out of his hands. You saw his ability to make plays on the move, his ability to extend, you know, plays in the pocket. I think he is, or he can be, that guy that the Bears have missed since, you know, Jim McMahon.
The Ravens also opened their training camp. Reports out of Baltimore, not heaping the pressure on John Harbaugh, but certainly reminding the Ravens that they've fallen short of their high standards in the last couple of years. There's been a lot of talk about Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. Jeff, apparently a few plays in training camp where both players have their hands on the football on the same play. Now, that could mean Lamar Jackson playing receiver, but clearly they want to get Jackson on the field. It's Flacco's team for now. In a second, I want to go through the five rookie quarterbacks taken in round one and see which of those can wrestle away a job in training camp. So let's start with, you know, chat about Flacco and Lamar Jackson. We said it might have started the clock ticking on the end of Flacco's time. Flacco thinks they're going to win this year, so that talk will be irrelevant. But of course he's going to say that. He's a competitor. But he's got this young, exciting player looking over his shoulder, and what was he been compared very favorably to Michael Vick when he came out, Jeff?
Well, you know, when you watch Lamar Jackson as a college player, you saw a guy that was much like Michael Vick. I mean, you talk about dynamic, could make plays with his feet, he has a big arm, his accuracy was the issue. His mechanics as a quarterback were an issue. But I think it's really interesting that one of the guys that's going to coach him, Marty Morningwig, has had Michael Vick. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's a lot of sentiment out of Baltimore that, you know, there's going to be a change, structurally a change in that offense. And, you know, because they are such different quarterbacks. Flacco is the quintessential drop back, you know, stay in the pocket kind of guy. Mm. And Lamar's a guy that can make plays all over the place and really turn the other players on the field, the other 22 players on or 21 players on the field into spectators with his athletic ability. I hear from, you know, players that in the Ravens organization that are playing with the kid that he is ultra, ultra talented and ultra dynamic on the field. And, you know, I think I would not be surprised, Neil, if they don't find a way to get that kid in a package and get him, you know, doing some things as a rookie, because, you know, they like his dynamic athletic ability.
I always tell the story, Jeff, and I remember this from the 80s when I was kind of getting into the NFL, and I remember even back then thinking it was bizarre and probably tough, but, you know, when you got into the years when Randall Cunningham came into the NFL as a rookie, and he was eventually replacing Ron Jaworski in Philadelphia. Jaworski would play first and second down, and Randall Cunningham came on third down, and it was like, okay, I understand why you're trying to get the youngster on, you know, and maybe make something happen in a situation where you need it, but a rookie year where you're only facing third and long or third downs is pretty challenging.
Yeah, you know what? I tell you what, I was in those Eagles training camps with Cunningham, and what was really interesting, he came out of UNLV, Neil, as you remember, and he had such a great athletic ability, but he had a really long throwing
motion. Big old long wind-up, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember watching Ted Plum working with him for hours in training camp. Ted was the quarterback coach for Buddy at that time. Mm. Watching him work for hours on Randall's throwing motion, trying to get him to shorten his throwing motion, and, you know, it worked to a certain degree, but really when Randall was at his best is when he was just an athlete out there making plays.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was, complete playground football was his great thing. Jeff, let's go through some of these other quarterbacks then. And again, we have to take into account that things change quickly in the NFL and things change dramatically. I'm going to be writing a diary piece for skysports.com during the course of my trip coming up back end of this week and over the weekend. And Jeff, I just went back on last year's diary entries just to check the format and see what I was going to write, how I was going to write it. And I picked out the one where I was with the Minnesota Vikings. And I make a point of talking about the fact that so many people in the Vikings organization were really high and really excited about Sam Bradford. By season's end, Bradford was hidden on the bench, and it was Case Keenum. So this all can change very quickly, can't it? And not just at the quarterback position, where you start and where you finish in the NFL from training camp, you know, it can be markedly different.
Yeah, I mean, how many people would have said we would be looking at Nick Foles winning a Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles?
Nick Foles against Case Keenum in the NFC Championship game.
Exactly. I mean, I was in the Eagles training camp to watch him interact with the Dolphins, and Foles was really just kind of an afterthought because all the attention was on, you know, on the starter and on the acquisitions that they had made in the off season and the whole deal. And, you know, there was Nick over there getting his work done, and lo and behold, he becomes the guy that wins the Super Bowl for him.
There you are. Well, let's just go through some of these then. Some of these veteran starters may get supplanted sooner rather than later, and some will hang on for a while. One who I think is going to hang on for a while, Jeff, is Tyrod Taylor up against the number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield, for the Cleveland Browns. I feel like they're going to give Tyrod a decent run here as they try and make the Browns competitive. I think Hugh Jackson needs some wins before he needs to be worrying about developing a young quarterback. How do you see this one playing out?
Well, I think it's going to play out that way, Neil, until Tyrod can't win.
Yeah.
If they go through a stretch of, let's say they lose three early, and particularly three in a row, I think there'll be just a clamor for Baker Mayfield. And you know, the guy that you draft, the quarterback that you draft in the first round, is always going to be seen as the savior for the franchise. And there's always going to be pressure from not only the fans, there's going to be pressure from ownership because, you know, he's paying the bills. And, yeah, and I want to know why that guy I'm paying millions of dollars for is standing on the sidelines and we're losing football games.
And, Jeff, Tyrod Taylor isn't bulletproof, is he? Let's not forget that Tyrod Taylor was replaced by Nathan Peterman at one point last year, which turned into a disaster for the Bills, and they went back to Taylor. But the Buffalo Bills were already in that situation of trying to move on from Taylor. There's no guarantee that, you know, Cleveland are going to stick with him long term because of what you say, that pressure from the outside. You know, Taylor has some warts as well.
Yeah, obviously he does, because Baltimore wouldn't have gotten rid of him to Buffalo if they thought he was the quarterback of the future or had a chance to be that. And then Buffalo, you know, he takes Buffalo to the playoffs and
can't wait
they
to get
move
rid of
on
him.
From him. Yeah, so there's got to be something there. But I think right now the best thing for the Browns, and certainly, you know, certainly for that quarterback and that head coach, is that they win some games early and get on a, you know, what's a role in Cleveland? A role in Cleveland is to win two games out of three to start the season. Mm. And, you know, they'll cancel school for a week. But, you know, that's just the way it is in Cleveland right now. Lose three straight and you're going to hear a lot of people, a lot of voices calling for Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, the man who's replaced Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo is A.J. McCarron for now. But Josh Allen, first rounder, cannon arm, strong arm. This one, Jeff, I could see, there's a couple here I can actually see the rookie being, you know, put in as the starter by the end of training camp. I think Josh Allen over A.J. McCarron, and I think Josh Rosen will give Sam Bradford a run for his money in Arizona. Let's talk about those two quarterback battles that should play out in training camp.
I think the Rosen thing, I think that may be, you know, he again, and we go back to what we, our evaluations of the quarterbacks for the draft. Mm. And I think both you and I agree, Neil, that Josh Rosen was the most NFL-ready quarterback in the draft.
Yeah.
You know, by what he did, by his, you know, his accuracy, his decision-making, all of those kinds of things. You know, there were issues with Rosen that I think got overblown, you know, his attitude and all those other things.
His Jay Cutler face.
And I was a little concerned about, you know, the injury situation with the kid. Mm. But if you just go on what you watched on tape, then you would say he would be the one that would play first of this bunch of guys.
Yeah, I think I feel like the reports coming out of Arizona as well are that he's done really well and he's been strong and he looks like he's mastered everything. So, you know, and again, Bradford has, if not, when you look at this list of veterans that we're talking about, Bradford is most likely to be the one that goes down injured early in the season as well, which could play into it. Does A.J. McCarron have a shot at hanging on to that job for a while, Jeff, or no?
I think he will for a little bit, Neil, okay, because of the fact that, you know, again, you know, the knock on Allen was not his arm. It was, you know, here's a guy that's never completed more than 60% passes all the way back. I think I researched it back to his high school junior year. And, you know, if you're not completing passes at a high percentage as a college player, it's really difficult to do it as a pro player. Mm. And I'm not talking about throwing checkdowns. I'm talking about throwing the intermediate to longer throws that he's going to have to make in smaller windows with, you know, obviously greater athletes at the NFL level than he faced in the Mountain West Conference with Wyoming. So I think that one's an interesting one to watch. There will be some, because the Pegulas, the owners of the Bills, were so actively involved in that decision in making that kid the pick, I think there will be some pressure from above to get him in, you know, get him on the field early.
And last one I wanted to talk about with these quarterbacks, Jeff, is Josh McCown versus Sam Darnold, but also versus Teddy Bridgewater, who had very good OTAs according to the Jets. There's a lot of suggestion that Teddy Bridgewater may end up being traded during the summer. So to me, I feel like the Jets are, I think the Jets are going to be sneaky good, Jeff. I think the defense is good. I think they can run the football, and they were competitive last year when Josh McCown was at the helm. There's going to be that pressure, though, isn't there, to get Darnold in there. I would start with McCown. What would you do?
Well, I think it's interesting interesting what you said about Teddy Bridgewater, because how much of that is disinformation that the Jets are putting out there?
Yeah.
Because they want other teams to think, okay, his knee's healed, he's done well in minicamp, da da da. And they, and again, this is kind of the espionage of the whole deal, is they may put him out in a couple training camp games early and, you know, give him an expanded package, knowing that the defenses that he's going to play against are more vanilla, he's not going to see as much blitzing, all those other things, and showcase him a little bit in training camp with the idea that, hey, we could move him and get some more pieces to help our rebuild, which I think is an interesting, you know, conspiracy theory to throw out there right now about the Jets. I think you're right, Neil. I think the Jets, you know, I think this Jet team really outplayed their overall talent level last year, and I think they really play hard for that coach. I think that they've got a good locker room. They've cleaned out some guys that, you know, from the old regime that were, you know, I'm not sure were great in the locker room. And I think this is a team that, you know, is ready to take another step. I think if McCown's healthy and he's still, because again, you're talking about a guy who's way up there in age now too.
Yeah.
You know, every year is a different year when you start getting up into his age frame about how much he's got left, how much tread he's got left on his tires. But if he's still got some tread left on those tires, I think he's the way to go, and then ease Sam Darnold into it. Because remember, one of the things we talked about with Sam Darnold is he's the youngest of these guys, too.
Yeah. Mm. Jeff, it's going to be fascinating to watch, and I'm actually really looking forward to seeing the Titans on the practice field and the Raiders on the practice field, because all you coaches have different styles. You have different ways you like to run practices, and I'm very interested to see Mike Vrabel, who's a defensive coach, but has made a commitment to saying he's going to open up the offense for Marcus Mariota, and they've got Matt LaFleur in from the Rams, and we know that that's been a hotbed for offensive football the last year or so. So I'm interested to see how Vrabel impacts on the Tennessee Titans, but I'm also compelled and fascinated to see John Gruden coaching. I've never watched a John Gruden-led practice. I was with Jared Cook, the tight end of the Raiders, last week here in London. We worked together on an NFL UK Live, and we were chatting, and I said, is Coach Gruden as intense as advertised? And he just had this big beaming smile, and he was like, you betcha he is. And so, you know, how Gruden coaches and rallies his troops, it's just going to be interesting to see that up close. And you know, because everyone has different styles, don't they?
Well, I think you're going to find out two things about a Gruden training camp. Number one, it's going to be loud, and number two, it's going to be very fast.
Yeah.
Because they will not be standing around. They will be working. and Johnny will be, you know, like I say, Johnny will be loud, and you may, don't take much audio, Neil, because you may have to bleep out some things. But it'll be fun to watch.
This is a training camp. These training camps, some big old comebacks in here, Jeff, as well. Maybe we don't see these guys in the preseason games because they're going to be wrapped in cotton wool, but training camps are going to be when we really find out how far along Carson Wentz is. You know, who knows what 100% means for Andrew Luck anymore? Is Ryan Tannehill ready? And it's not all about the quarterbacks. You know, what does J.J. Watt have left in the tank for the Houston Texans? Odell Beckham Jr., is he a full go for the New York Giants? I mean, I don't think we'll necessarily see that in preseason games, and more importantly, we want to see it probably in training camp and in joint practices. It's a big month or so coming up for some of these biggest named players in the NFL.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, Aaron Rodgers is another one.
Yes.
I really am anxious to see
Deshaun Watson.
How that dynamic's going to be in Green Bay after he's lost Jordy Nelson, and you know, the kind of stuff that was in the media about, you know, him in the off season, this past off season. I'm fascinated with the Odell Beckham thing, Neil. I think that's really going to be fun to watch about how they coach him. And you know, is it going to be, you know, it was really interesting. I saw a little piece on him the other day, and all of the catches that he was making in the little piece that they let out were those one-handed things, right? Like, are they going to drive him to become a more fundamentally, you know, positive receiver, you know, or is it going to be that circus that the Giants kind of allowed to happen in the end zone, you know, before games where it was just like, hey, look at me with doing all these one-hand catches down here. So I think how they deal with him, I think his interaction with, you know, with the head coach, which has been all positive, and the head coach has said all the right things during the off season. You know, training camp is when it gets to be a grind. Training camp is when tempers get short. Training camp is when, you know, it's hot. It's, you know, it's a highly pressurized environment. I think you're in for some really interesting stuff when you're on the road.
And my trip starts with a visit, Jeff, bizarrely. I still can't get my head around the fact that he took the job, but Oliver Luck is the president of the XFL, and I'm going to go up and interview Oliver for the NFL Europe documentary. I know at the end of the trip, our producer and cameraman, Alex Mason, and Scott, our cameraman, are coming up to Canada to see you and interview you for our documentary that we're making. But I'm going to sit down with Oliver Luck, and obviously we're going to have great memories of NFL Europe, and really I'm going to find out what plans they've got for the XFL. But I'm dying to ask what's going on with Andrew Luck, because I mean, Jeff, this is a massive question mark for the Colts. And as I said, Andrew Luck's new 100%, maybe three quarters of what he used to be. We just don't know, because he's been out for so long with such a serious injury.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be one of those deals that everybody in that organization holds their breath until, you know, they see him on the field and take a hit and be able to get himself off the ground and come back and play again. I am really, you know, I'm not as big a Andrew Luck fan as you are, certainly, but I am a huge fan of the kid, and I want to see him come back and have a great year. He's a great person. He's been a great ambassador for the National Football League, for the Indianapolis Colts. And, you know, when a guy's been away as long as he has, you really, really root for him, because, you know, he's been a guy that, frankly, has his health and his career probably have suffered because of what was going on in the front office with the Colts.
Yeah, I genuinely believe that. I've actually mentioned I like Andrew Luck. I didn't know. I thought I was just thought I kept those thoughts to myself. Yeah, but I think he's a victim of Ryan Grigson's incompetence, basically. Jeff, this as we get to training camp, I'm going to ask this with a huge sigh. Oh, it's not going away. This anthem stuff's not going to go away, is it?
I mean, well, it doesn't seem to. And you know, I don't know why the NFL wants to wade into this. You know, I think it's
because, Jeff, there's so much good stuff. We just talked for 37 minutes about good stuff that's exciting us about the new season. It's just around the corner, but this is still going to be there, and it's going to be a bit of a backdrop, unfortunately. And I mean, you get your thoughts as well, but I think it's all become lost, and we forget what the original thing was. And it was nothing against the flag from the players. It was they were making a statement about social injustice. They're not trying to disrespect the flag of the United States of America. And that, to me, seems like that's so long ago that was a thing. It's almost been forgotten.
Yeah, and you know, like, for example, Chris Long. I mean, he was one of the most passionate. He gave away an entire year's salary, Neil.
Right.
An entire, didn't make a penny of his money. Gave it all away.
Show me many people that would do that, Jeff. And then you cannot in any way put that man in a situation where you're trying to view him negatively. You just can't.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I think about this: if you're a fringe guy, and you know, now if you want to make a statement, if you want to, and again, what's making a statement? Whether it's taking a knee or whatever. Well, think about that. That impacts your career now, because the owners have basically said, or the league has basically said, you want to make those kind of statements, you better find another league to play in. And I just don't think they need to wade into that kind of water.
All right. Should we take a few mailbag questions, Jeff?
Let's do it.
Let's have a look at some of these. Here's one from Brian Friel, who says, is Tom Brady on his last go-around this year? He stated he wants to go to 45, but with Gronk nearing the end, are the weapons still there for him to reach the heights that New England consistently get to? So that's from Brian Friel. Jeff, I'm just going to say this. I've seen a few pictures of Tom Brady over the summer. He's either enjoying his summer or the TB12 stuff's not worked. He's looking like Tom Brady, who was at the combine before he, you know, 5 Super Bowl rings and about $100 million ago. So he's done all right for himself. But I mean, I think this is his last lap. I think this season's his last lap. What do you think with Brady?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell because to me, he's such a great competitor and he loves the game so much and he loves all the preparation and all that's involved in it. And
well, he did, but he's missed OTAs this year.
Yeah, you know, and I think. Some of that is him maybe taking a little bit more of an independent stance, if you will. That, you know, he's always been, he's been, again, like Julio Jones, he's always been one of those guys that say, this is the kind of guy you want to have on your football team. Mm-hmm. And I think there is some, you know, I think there's some to be said for his stance and saying, you know, I don't need to be in there, so I'm not coming in there. And I've earned the right with what I've done over time to, you know, just take a little bit longer off season. And I think he's, you know, to be honest with you, I think he has earned that right.
Yeah, he's earned the right to call whatever shots he wants to call. And, yeah, because it's all production. He's always productive on a Sunday. The last time he stepped on the field, he threw for more than 500 yards in the Super Bowl. Let's take one from Neil Murphy, who says, why is there such an air of negativity surrounding Ryan Tannehill? He's had one serious injury, despite being the most sacked quarterback in the NFL since he started playing in the league. Well, I think, Jeff, it's because the Dolphins have played 20 games without him now. You know, it was the back end of 2016. Then it was actually a second injury, so it's two serious injuries because he missed all of last season as well. So he hasn't thrown a pass in a game since December 2016. Isn't quarterback a kind of a field position and one of those where the more reps you get, the more playing time you get, the better you are?
That's always been the case, and I think, you know, again, we talked about luck and Tannehill's much in the same boat. I mean, these guys are going to have some rust on them, and I think people need to be patient with them. And you know, they need the reps, but again, you know, they're tender right now, and you got to manage those reps extremely well. I think the same thing, you know, we'll see in Philadelphia that they're going to be really, really cautious. I think you'll see him more on the sideline, Neil, when you go to Philadelphia, than you'll actually see him in the huddle, and particularly early in training camp. And I think, you know, all those quarterbacks that are coming off injury, you've got to be extremely, extremely cautious to how much exposure you give them during training camp, but they've got to get their work. So you'll see them in Skelly, you'll see them in, you know, those drills. The thing that makes coaches worry is when you get in those close quarter drills where there's rushers around them, and you're never going to hit the quarterback in training camp, but it's somebody falls and there's a pile of bodies or a body gets thrown into him or whatever, and that's how you lose them. And so, you know, one of the things you'll hear 9 million times in training camp is stay off the ground.
I saw it in OTAs in Philadelphia. I mean, Carson Wentz did all the one-on-ones. He did 7-on-7. As soon as it went to team, Carson was off on the sidelines working out on his own.
Yep. And that's typically the protocol as you try and get him back.
This is a good one, Jeff, from Richard George. So, you know, we know the players have just had about 5 weeks off after OTAs before training camps. Richard says, how much rest really happens in the summer break for players and coaches as it is so close to training camp? Jeff, I've spoken to a number of players on this, and then you can weigh in with the players that you've been around and coaches. I've spoken to a number of players on this about, you know, do you really take the time off? And they kind of say they maybe take a week or 2 weeks. Like I was with Alex Gray, the British tight end, quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. And Alex said he kind of took a week to 10 days, maybe 2 weeks max for a break, just from a mental side of things. And then the last couple of weeks, Alex has been on the field catching passes. He did a two-hour session on the field and then was going home to the gym. He's been doing mixed martial arts training. The players stay in shape. Those days, like you alluded to right at the start of today's podcast, where you'd have six-week training camps to get in shape, that doesn't really happen. So from speaking to players, seems like they'll take between 1 and 2 weeks off, or maybe, yeah, but they keep ticking over. What do you make of that for players and coaches?
I think you're exactly right for the players, Neil, because they have to understand, and there's a saying in pro football, your body's your business, so you better take care of your business. And, you know, you can't afford it. It's so highly competitive for most guys. Now, there'll be some veterans who know that, you know, they're not going to, their career is not in jeopardy, their place on the team is not in jeopardy, that may take a little bit longer and may come into camp a little bit fatter, or, you know. But if you're a young kid trying to make a football team, you better make sure that when you get to camp, you are razor sharp, and, you know, you're not, you know, looking at the end of a, you know, 4-week trip to Mexico and, you know, where you haven't run and you haven't lifted and you haven't studied your playbook and you haven't done, you know, your stretching and done all the things. These guys, I'm telling you, it is a nonstop job for these guys. It is not just show up like you say it used to be. And, you know, you talk about the guys back in the old days, you know, like back in the 60s. Those guys would put their cigarette down and you know, go to training camp.
They put their cigarette down on breakfast of training camp. That was Fred Biletnikoff. Yeah. And what about the coaches then, Jeff? Because the coaches don't need to be in the same kind of physical shape as a player. We know that that's the one time Bill Belichick would get away and get on his boat. Do they have the entire 5 weeks off? How does it work for coaches in the NFL?
No, it typically doesn't work like you're going to get all five. You're going to get a part of five. But, you know, you have to have a presence in the office during the off season and during those times. And so what typically is done is you'll rotate through those 5 weeks, you know, because you're going to have there's always something that you need to work on. There's always questions that you have to get straight. And so for the coordinators, it may be less than that. They may be in there, you know, of the 5 weeks, they maybe have 2 weeks off and have 3 weeks where they're, you know, quote, on vacation, but they're still in the office.
Right.
So it's a big job, and it's a 24/7
year round,
65 day a year job. That's just the way it is.
Let's take one last question. Well, it's not really a question. Matthew Nash has teased us to finish this sentence. The Cleveland Browns, from zero to...
I'm going to say five, Neil. I think they win five, and I think they will be much more competitive. I think they've gone out and got on defense some of the kind of players that... You know, Greg wants. I think that, you know, you look at his style of defense. You got to be able to play man to man, and they went out and got some guys that, you know, can do that. And I think they're better. They're going to be better offensively another year into the program. You know, again, the young defensive end, I think, is showing us that he can be an impact guy. Now, how much of a jump is he going to make in his second year? So I really do think they have got a chance. And that division now, again, is not as strong as it's been. So I think they've got a chance to, you know, win five games, which for Cleveland would be something.
Jeff, because I'm about to go on holiday tomorrow, go to work at training camp, so I'm in a good mood. So I'm going to say 7 wins.
Ooh.
Pass me the Kool-Aid. I'm drinking it. I don't even know what Kool-Aid is, but I've
When was the last time there were 7 wins in Cleveland?
Well, yeah, it's probably a decade. It's probably adding up all the wins in one decade. Jeff, I just want to finish off, be remiss of us not to talk about it. I was kind of doing it at the end of the podcast because we've kind of been having fun, but just finish with this. Such terribly sad news. Tony Sparano, the offensive line coach of the Minnesota Vikings. He was head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Dolphins fans fondly remember him dipping into the Wildcat and beating the New England Patriots and winning that division in 2008. He was an interim head coach for the Oakland Raiders as well. Great people person, Jeff, according to a lot of people who played for him and coached with him. Died suddenly Sunday morning, just 56 years of age.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, and I thought the immediate two thoughts that I had was, number one, how much his players really enjoyed playing for him and how devastated they must be to not have him around. And then, you know, additionally, you know, we kind of have a saying in coaching that you're going to face three lightning bolts every season. And for the Viking organization, that is a tremendous lightning bolt right before training camp, because, you know, you can find coaches, but it's hard. the dynamics of a coaching staff, the dynamics of, we always talk about the dynamics of the locker room. Well, it's the same thing. The dynamics of the meeting room and the coaches, you know, the coaches' rooms are very, very important. And, you know, now they lose an integral piece in Minnesota. And I think this is going to be something that, you know, is going to have to be, that they're going to have to do a great job overcoming, all the way from, you know, the general manager through the head coach through the everybody in the organization, because it'll be a loss.
Mm. Jeff, that stuff that really struck me was when people talked about him being a people person. You know, no nonsense. He was tough. He kind of spoke his mind, but he loved his players. A bit like, you know, Jimmy was that way. Jim Tomsula, when he took the head coaching job with the 49ers, and maybe wasn't necessarily the, you know, that CEO looking type person. But I thought, well, that's Sparano being a people person. That should be what coaching is about, isn't it? And I've actually been really enjoying. I must just plug this. I've been watching the Last Chance U series seasons on Netflix. I'd never seen them before. I'm sitting watching them with George most of the summer, and they're fantastic. But Jeff, the coaches in those, they're screamers. They're not people. They're not people. They're you know, they remind you how it shouldn't be done. And yeah, just so I think that's an important thing, isn't it? Is that your coaches, you've got to connect with people.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing that sometimes gets lost, Neil, is this is a people business. It's, you're dealing with, you know, and yeah, they are millionaires, and yeah, there's all, but I'm tell you what, when you get to know them, as you know them, and certainly as I know them, that they're 22 to 20 to, you know, 32-year-old men that have all the issues that come with, you know, being in that position, and you know, they're young fathers and husbands, and you know, they, I mean, it is a dynamic. And the guys, the great ones that I've been around, and you know, none greater than Dick Vermeil, had an unbelievable ability to connect with the people that they worked with. And I think that was Tony, and like I say, I think it's going to be a big blow to the Viking organization.
Yeah, I remember Greg Jennings telling me once, Jeff, I said, tell me a sort of secret of the NFL. And he said that, you know, there's no days off. You're not allowed to just call in sick. But he said, also, we have bills to pay. We have arguments with our wives. We have to run and pick the kids up from preschool. We have sleepless nights where the baby was up all night. All of those kind of things all play into the locker room. And as coaches, you have to know when to, you have to pick up on that. You have to know when to ride a guy hard, and you have to know when to put an arm around him. And the only way, I guess, you can do that, Jeff, is by being invested in their lives. And I noticed, you know, looking at you on Twitter, that you've been regularly having players around to your house for dinners. I've seen that since you've been with the BC Lions. That's a very basic thing, just having someone to your house for dinner, but also it probably breaks down a lot of barriers and makes things easier when it comes to dealing with the players and understanding where they're at, really.
Yeah, and again, that's something that I borrowed from Coach Vermeil. I mean, that was one of his things, and he was going to have every player and their wife or their significant other or whatever to his home. He was going to cook for him. He was going to let them see him in a different light, because I think there can be a separation between the coaching offices and the locker room if it's allowed to happen. I mean, you know, we talked about in Atlanta, where, you know, the head coach moved his office down to the level where the players were, so that they could see him every day, because they need that interaction. It is a long, hard season. And one of the, you know, we're going to talk about NFL Europe, but I thought one of the really great things about NFL Europe was, Neil, you lived in the hotel with the players for the entire season.
Yeah.
So they got to know you, you got to know them, and if you couldn't get along with people, if you couldn't interact, if you weren't a people person, you couldn't survive in that environment. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things, one of the keys to being in this business for a long time and being good in this business for a long time, is you've got to be able to connect to human beings, and that's who they are. Those are the players that you're going to coach.
Jeff lived in many a hotel with NFL Europe players during his time over in Amsterdam, in Dusseldorf, and that, folks, is why he has no trouble getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's when all his players were coming in.
Hey, you know what's really cool? I'm over here in Hawaii. I pick up the paper this morning, and I see the University of Hawaii signs this young offensive lineman from here on the island. And it was, I'm sure you remember the kid, Joe Wong.
Yeah.
Was an offensive lineman that we had in Amsterdam.
Amsterdam,
and Joe's son is now going to go play at the UH, and Joe had been a seventh round draft pick of the Dolphins, and played for the Dolphins, the Raiders, and I think somebody else. But, you know, it's really cool when you see the players that you coach, their sons now growing up and becoming players themselves.
It's cool, but it makes you feel old. All right, Jeff, we are out of time on this week's Inside the Huddle. I'm off to the United States, so next week we'll record on Thursday because I get back sort of midweek. So we'll record on Thursday. In the meantime, I'm off to study some U.S. geography because, as you know, I'm not very good at it.
Well, I tell you what, that travel agent... It gives you a great opportunity to learn.
There you go. I'm like Madden on his bus. I like to see the country while I'm there. So, all right, this has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. Signing off is Jeff Reinbold. You heading off surfing today, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm going to get about another hour worth of sleep, and I'm going to get up and challenge those waves this morning.
So all right. Good, man.
Enjoy your day.
Yeah, you too, and enjoy your time there. Until next time, say goodbye to the good folks, Jeff.
Aloha.